Every once in a while, someone asks me, what do you do? Well, the number one item on my job description is to set, clarify, and maintain the objective. My job is to see to it that the navigators stick with the calling that God, we feel, has given us, and to see how we're doing. It's, some of you know, one of my favorite stories is about the little boy who was bugging his parents about the watch, and it seemed like every time he had a chance to say something, he'd talk about he wanted a watch. And his parents finally got so sick of it, they said, look, we don't want you to mention that word watch once more in this household. So they had company for dinner on Sunday, and in this home, after dinner, they would quote some scriptures as they went around. It came to the little boy, and he says, Mark 13:37, what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch. So what I do, I just go around the world and saying, what I say to you, I say to all, laborers. Jesus wants more laborers to stick on the goal. He wants more light. He wants more salt in this needy world. The last 4 weeks was a business trip, and it's kind of hard to report on a business trip. It isn't all that exciting, but I thought, well, at least I could give you an account. Maybe that's fair enough. The trip was more or less taken together. I can't say together. It was more or less a similar trip with four of us. Doug, Sparks, Lauren Libby, Al Andrews, and myself. We only touched base together a couple times during the time we were over there. But scattered for the most part. But I would like to say that I appreciate the opportunity when Bob called this morning of just giving a report. Because the prayer backing of like-minded, like-hearted co-laborers is tremendous. Now, I was thinking last night, it's really interesting. I don't know how your life runs, but I oftentimes say we pray for the wrong people. We pray for those who are traveling, and that's the easiest part of my job. It's being around Colorado Springs and facing all the things, the decisions that have to be made here. I was home one day, and I was up a good part of last night already thinking about one of the aspects that was awaiting. While I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, we all have limitations. We have human limitations, all of us. But then as we get older and we grow into leadership, either we have or we, in addition to that, we develop handicaps. They may be physical handicaps of one kind or another. Either personally or with one member of the family. There may be a wayward child. But as John Crawford said to me one day, he said, Lauren, we're not only called to run this race, but we're called to run it with a 25-pound pack on our back. And I think it is very true that you find anybody who is being greatly used of God, you will find, if you look closely, there is some kind of a secret cross they bear. And Paul himself said that he had this thorn in the flesh that God refused to remove. So it's well to think of that, and therefore, prayer is appreciated. We all need and appreciate prayer. And I want to thank you for this. My trip had two major purposes and a number of minor activities that I engaged in. The major purpose, number one, was to arrange for the leadership of the division we call EMMA. In the Navigators, we have four major divisions. U.S., what we call EMMA, Europe, Middle East, and Africa is a division, Latin America, and then what's called the Pacific Areas Navigators. So it sweeps all the way from New Zealand all the way around to South Korea. Well, one of those is EMMA. So I met with Doug and the five EMMA regional directors, plus Joyce Turner for a few days. And after that four-day conference, we had a week-long get-together with 30-some of our key representatives in Europe on 4.5 days on the fundamentals of the ministry. And to them, I made this announcement concerning the leadership for that division. That we had asked Doug to leave that division to come to Colorado Springs to help me, particularly with the overseas aspects of our work. But we wanted to stay with Emma as a division for its own strength, more decentralized, etc. Now Doug has a leadership management project that he's been assigned since then, and that's full time. He is slated to take over the Asian part of our work, or PAN, in the summer of 1979. So he needs to be relieved of the directorship of this EMMA division immediately. Well, who should replace him? For any one of the present EMMA RDs, it's about 3 years too soon. First, because of the ministries that they have, that they need to develop, and some of the leadership they need to develop, and also because of some personal and family situations. So we needed an outside divisional director to come in for 3 years. And there are a number of us, including me, who are standing in line for that job. But the ILT and myself and the five EMMA directors, RDs, were unanimous in extending an invitation to Jim and Marina Downing to take that assignment for the next 3 years beginning this summer. That would mean moving to probably England, reestablishing the EMMA divisional headquarters, and leading these five RDs. I haven't seen Jim since I came home. I don't know if he's going or not. I don't think he's here. He's not here just as well. He needs to rest up for that job. Although I must say this, that Doug did a great job in raising up some leaders out there. It's going to be a lot of fun, I know, for the Downings that to take on that responsibility. But there was 100% unanimity in all the people directly involved in that decision and an excitement about their coming, and feel that they're ideal for what's needed next. So that was the first main item that was my job to clarify over there. The second was to interact with our key Europe staff on the fundamentals of the ministry. Now that's a seminar. In fact, this is it right here. On the navigators, if we're legitimate to exist at all, if so, what is the biblical basis for it? What is our calling? What are the most effective means we have to carry out that calling? Etc. So this is the ninth time around. I've gone around the world with this, and it's the ninth time through. And I like you to know, those folks over there are thinkers. I think they're more philosophers than we are. And that was some good interaction. There were 33 of us there for the 4.5-day conference. And some of their highlights, when I got all through, they split up into three groups, spent an hour and a half in each group critiquing the presentation. Of course, we'd had interaction, too, during the week. But here are some of the things they said were most helpful about it. They liked particularly that it was not only biblical, but Bible-based. And that's one of the big things we're trying to hang in there on, is keep a thing not only biblical, but rooted in the Bible. And not only but with Bible principles, but Bible illustrations. The second thing, they liked that it was principles and not rules. They liked the emphasis on the process rather than primarily on the product. And that it promotes, said they, confidence, unity, and clarity. Areas needing improvement. Number one, the primary focus of the whole project, laborer, is nebulous. Isn't that interesting? Got everything clear but that. And also, we've got some pretty sharp minds pointed out the fact that our definitions and profiles are inconsistent. They seem to lean one way and one page and another page. So we'll work on that. And some other suggestions. Now the next step on this project, we're going to finalize the central statement of the aim at the International Leadership Team get-together here the last week of April. And then Jim Peterson, who is our divisional director in Latin America, who started this project for us 4 years ago, is going to stay over for a couple of weeks and help write this into its, quotes, final form. Something like this never really is final. Other purposes for the trip were some exposure for my assistant, Lauren Libby, And he'll have his own story to tell when he gets back. He got down into Yugoslavia, which is quite an outstanding experience, and some interaction with our Eastern Europe team, as well as other exposures, and participated in the conference I just mentioned. Al Andrews, who was the director of our work in Canada, we took him along for some exposure to the Europe leadership, also to look at some of the area ministries in England and in Holland. I've gotten some reports of the tremendous stimulation he was. He's quite a thinker and has really thought through on this basis of what a navigator area ministry ought to look like. And according to Al's evaluation, there is a navigator representative in Holland by the name of Douwe Semmelink, a Dutchman from South Africa, who, according to Al, has the finest area ministry he has ever seen anywhere, anytime. So I guess the Dutchmen are going to be help lead the way on how to get the job done. At least the Douwe Semmelink will be. I had time with each of the regional directors personally. One, Bob Vidano, I think just outstandingly for Bob and Marilyn Vidano, who are back in Beirut, Lebanon. You know, it's an interesting thing. You read about the Israelis going up there and taking that zone in southern Lebanon. According to Vidano, the Syrians, as you know, came into that civil war. First they were on the leftist side, and then 2 weeks later they switched to the other side. That's the way things are out there. You don't know who's on what side on what day. But the Syrians came in, and they now are keeping the peace. But the Palestinians in these camps constitute quite a thorn in the flesh to them, so they move them all down to the Israeli border with a view that, well, the Israelis will take care of them. That's what I was told months ago, last September. So then you wonder how come they can move in there and take that all over, and the Syrian army, which is occupying Lebanon, isn't doing a thing about it. They're very happy for the Israelis to take charge of that and keep that thing quieted down. Wild, that part of the world. Just wild. You know, who's doing what? You just don't know. But the big thing with our Middle Eastern team is that their concerted effort to really learn how to reach Muslims. We've had good success with those with Christian background, but Muslims. For instance, Bob and Marilyn themselves in their personal ministry pray regularly for Muslim couples. And then they accept an invitation to some of the Muslim feasts here this last fall. And then they turned around and invited those Muslim friends to a Christmas feast at their house. And these are quite extravagant affairs, and they include speeches and talks and so on. So it was a great opportunity to explain to them why they remember Christmas. Also on Thursdays now, they fast and pray every Thursday concerning a breakthrough into the Muslim world. So as we meet on Thursdays for prayer, we can remember that we're especially joining that Middle Eastern staff, who I think probably have the toughest situation in the navigator world, all things put together. The instability, the Muslim world, etc. So we can remember them in prayer. Also, because the Lebanese do come to the States for education, and also because of the disruption of the Lebanese war, there are 30-some navigator-trained Arabs in the States who either are in university or have gotten out of university now and have good jobs, many of whom are giving to the work back in the Middle East, but would like to see some more of them recruited to go back to the Middle East. And so they're praying about a recruiting trip. Bob Vidano and perhaps Nabil Jabour, who is a Lebanese fellow who is opening a work in Egypt, Cairo. So that's something to pray for. Marv Smith, who's responsible for the work in Africa, two main concerns there. One, the continuing skyrocketing costs of the ministry in Ghana. And whether or not that's going to force us to make some drastic changes, we don't know, but it's a possibility. Another is continued prayer for permission to get missionaries into Nigeria. I think the application there, the quota we'd like to get is what, 10? Just 4. So That hasn't opened up yet. But that's Nigeria. And Mike Trinneer, who is the country leader for Nigeria, lives in London, pretty sure. Had a couple days with Paul and Phyllis Stanley. Prayer for them as they reestablish their family in Bonn, Germany, where there is not a good church to which they can relate their family, and that's very important to them as a family, and other things to get established in a culture they need prayer for. Roots is the key word for them, a home base. Had a little time of ministry with them. They, wherever they go, they have a ministry, so they let me get involved in a little bit of it. One Saturday afternoon and evening with three couples, colonel in the Army and his wife, commander of the Navy and his wife, and executive with Procter & Gamble and his wife. Had 3 days over in Holland with our Dutchman, Gerrit Durneval, and his wife, Boukje. Gerrit is a very charismatic, intense fellow. He's the kind of a guy that, yes, from the platform, even though English is his second language, he's certainly a captivating speaker with his intensity, his zealousness, his illustrations, etc. He's had migraine headaches, and these have come on and off through the years and recently been very severe. And just, I mean, really severe, with throwing up and knocking him out of action for a day or a couple days at a time or longer. So that's a concern there. And I have a notebook full of thoughts from Gerrit. He's quite a thinker. He has a little talk on how we develop insecure navigators. I got his outline on that. And point number one is our wrong focus. When we put the focus on the fruit instead of on God, we're going to develop insecure navigators. Good point. I'll plagiarize the little talk and give it myself sometime. Time with Roger Anderson, and what a faithful man. Then along the way, I had an evening with John Stott. He's one of my counselors along life's way. I check out my theology with him on the church, find out what he thinks about a few things, and how long he thinks a guy ought to stay in a job like mine. And I won't tell you what he said. And then flew from there to California, and my brother and I painted my dad's house on the outside. Last fall, I'd stopped there to see my parents, and my dad was, he's 84, he was up on the roof painting a certain part of the roof that needed painting. And he told me then that he decided he was going to quit that for health reasons. It was giving the neighbors coronaries to see him. My parents have been so agile and so active, and they still are, but Dad's slowing down quite a little bit. So I saw the house, was the paint was peeling off, so we arranged that my brother and I would paint it for him. And it was great. It quit raining about a day or two before I got there, and it started to rain the day after we got finished. And so I appreciated that. Now I thought I would just wind up with one of these not-for-publication type things. And that is, some people said to me, well, where do the navigators have a ministry? Well, I keep changing the numbers. Somewhere between 32 and 34 places where we're officially operating, countries. But what, do you know the latest on that, Donald? Or what are we saying these days?
We're saying 34.
We're saying 34. Okay. Well, one, and I said there are several places where we're not supposed to be, and one of those is Burma. Now, all the missionaries have been kicked out of Burma, but there is a navigator ministry there. Well, I think one of the highlights of the time in Germany was meeting a German fellow, a linguist, professor, who was the key to getting that ministry started in Burma. His name is Hermann Janssen. He's a German linguist professor, and a contract was made between the West German and the Burmese government for him to do a German-Burmese dictionary. So out there in Burma, he began to lead a few people to Christ. Well, then he got some help from the navigators and follow-up from such people as Warren Myers and Dave Dawson, the Singapore navigators. Now, as a result of this, there are several hundred that would call themselves navigator laborers there in Burma. Just recently, not too long ago, they had invited 150 specially chosen ones of the navigator contacts to come for a special training seminar. And Dave Dawson and some of the navs from Singapore came up to put that on. But apparently the word leaked out and 250 came. And apparently there you don't send those home that weren't registered, so they took them in one way or another, and they had 250. They don't have much to work with. They have to hand write out the Bible studies, that is, the questions as well as the answers. Not all of them have a Bible, so in fact most don't. But they can get Bibles, but they're scarce. So they have a little lending library there of a Bible. You can get a Bible and borrow it, and you write out the question and write out the answers to the questions, and when you've completed a certain number of the Bible studies, then they'll help you get a Bible. So you can earn one that way. So it was exciting to get a first-hand report from him as to what's going on there. Some years ago, I read a book. You can tell I just took it out of my library. It's an old one. I think it was first published in 1944. It's called Behind the Ranges. Some of you may have read it. It's about a China inland missionary by the name of James Fraser, born in 1886. Along about 1911, 1912, he went out to China as a missionary. And his particular assigned field, what they call the Lisu people. And this book tells of the fantastic spiritual struggle that this man had. The very little response that he had. But at the heart of it, there's a book, or a chapter rather, called The Prayer of Faith. In fact, I think this has been lifted out and put in a little pamphlet called Prayer, Faith, and Patience. And in it, he tells how God led him to this matter of the prayer of faith. And he began to pray for families, not just individuals, but families. Then after some years of binding the strong man, of intercessory prayer, there began to be a harvest of souls by families. First this village and that village, and these are back in the mountains. And then he tells how he was unable to visit all of them as often as he would like. And he prayed for them. And he found himself praying more for those converts in those villages he was unable to visit than those that he was able to get to. Then after some time he began to notice that those that he prayed for more but visited less seemed to be getting along better than those he was able to get to. So he came up with a conclusion, and to put it in navigator terms, that there are four basic things necessary for follow-up. The first is prayer, the second is prayer, the third is prayer, and the fourth is the word. Well, several times through the years, I browsed through the book, reread, and studied certain chapters from this book, and James Fraser. Lisu people. Well, Herman Johnson was telling us from Burma that not long ago there was a Christian conference in northern Burma of 100,000 Christian Burmese. And who ministered to them? Evangelists from the Lisu tribe coming across the border from China. And that they believe there are well over several hundred thousand Christians in northern Burma, many of whom led to Christ by evangelists coming across the border from China, from the Lisu tribes. And I put that all together in my mind, that we did something down deep. You know, and I think, like in the Old Testament, God says, I will not forget the promise I made to Abraham, or the promise I've made to David. Or I refer to that today we still see answers to prayer of Dawson's promises and his prayers, and he's been dead for over 20 years. And here again, somebody way back there in the early 1900s and today, the prayer, the sacrifice, that all that went into that, God is still honoring those prayers. That's really something. And one of my goals for the remainder of my life is Isaiah 58:12, to lay the foundations of many generations, to leave behind, hopefully, a worldwide multiplying ministry. And putting all these things together, I think, what could I do most that would help the greatest? Well, I think sometimes I spend a lot too much time trying to figure out organizational solutions to spiritual problems, when here is another evidence that what God does in answer to prayer, He does forever. Another thing I've been learning lately, that what God does, He does forever. What I do doesn't last very long. But prayer. But you know, there's something about that. The time to pray. So I was thinking of Luke 9:23. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Now just basically to me, that means that you say a big yes to Christ. If any man will come after me, yes, I have decided I will be a follower of Jesus Christ my whole lifetime. That's my inner dedication. It's like committing oneself in marriage till death do us part. If any man will come after me, okay, then let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. And as I puzzle over that, I keep coming back to this. That to deny yourself simply means to say no to yourself, and to take up the cross means to say yes to Christ daily. But the point I want to leave is this. That you can't say yes to adding something else to your life without saying no to something else that you're going to drop off. And that's where the priorities come in. And that's where I think that the sacrifice comes in. Now, we believe in prayer. We believe in the commitment to Christ. But to say yes to Him means to say no to something else to make room for it. Because our lives are already jam full. And whether that, and I don't mean it means bad things. I think it means maybe no to some good things. The things we watch, the things we read, the things we do. Adequate recreation, yes. And you'll excuse me here, another illustration popped into my mind. Years ago we visited, Doss Trotman and I, a doctor who was an outstanding soul winner. And his books, he had a lot of books out on the subject. They've since gone out of print. Dr. Walter Lewis Wilson. He was a medical doctor, president of Bible school, pastoring a little church. Had a family, I don't know, I think of 5 or 6 kids, some kind of a, you know, pretty good sized family. And we're visiting in his home. It was the first place I ever saw that little sign, you know, why pray when you can worry? I remember seeing that on their living room wall. He said he made a study of his time. He's a busy man. And he kept track of it for a week. And then he analyzed it on certain criteria. Does it glorify God? Does it forward my calling? Does it help the family? Etc. And he came to the conclusion that he was wasting about 2 hours a day. So then I say to myself, so you got rushed in your prayer time this morning. So you didn't get that half day that you were going to get. What's the reason? Well, I come back to Luke 9:23. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. And it's those saying no and saying yes daily in the secret place of our lives that nobody else sees or knows or hears about that makes a difference, I think, in the kind of ministry and its permanency as well as its effectiveness. Thank you, Bob.